My name is Kay Eccleston, and today is April 3rd, 2011, and I am at the home of Shirley Budd, and Shirley and I are going to conduct her interview for the Gathering Project. So Shirley, just to get started, if you would like to just take a few minutes and tell me about yourself, about your family, just kind of that general information that people might need to know about you.
Okay, well, I have two brothers and a sister, and was born to the parents of Bridget and Robert Mangan, and I'm the only one that still lives here in Anaconda.
Okay.
So I have a brother in Seattle, a sister in Buford, Georgia, and my brother Tom is in Helena. And for several years, I did nursing most of my life, and I enjoyed that. And also, when Ray was alive, we ran a jewelry store.
Okay.
And we have one son, and I have four stepchildren and six step-grandkids.
Okay.
And one grandson.
And Shirley, when and where exactly were you born?
I was born here in Anaconda at St. Anne's Hospital. 1936.
Okay. And where do you fall in your immediate family?
I'm the oldest.
Okay. Okay. And then you've been married twice, and you were first married to Ray Black. Black. And when did you and Ray get married?
We got married on the 19th of May in 1962.
Okay.
And he died the 26th of January in 1975.
Okay.
And our son Ryan was 2 years old when he died. He dropped dead on a ski hill.
Okay. Okay.
And then Joe and I got married on the 14th of August in 1982.
Okay. And your stepchildren's names?
Well, we have Greg and Cindy and Debbie. And that's it.
Okay.
Kids. Yeah.
Okay. Couple of things. You mentioned that you you went to nurses training and you were a nurse. Did you work in Anaconda or have you worked outside of Anaconda?
I worked mostly in Anaconda.
Okay.
I worked at the hospital. I worked a bit for Dr. Lacey. Then I did home health.
Okay. Okay. Is your current husband or was your first husband of Irish ancestry?
No, Ray was a German.
Okay.
And Joe has a little bit of Irish, but kind of chop suey.
Okay, okay. And do you want to tell us a little bit about how your family came to Montana from Ireland? You know, where your parents were born, where your grandparents were born? Anything of that type of information that you know?
Okay, my grandparents on my mom's side were from Galway. And they came over to New York, you know, through, what was it, Ellis Island.
Mm-hmm.
And then they came here because he was going to find work working on the smelter,
okay.
Which he did. And my dad's parents were from County Cork. And I don't know too much about them because I don't know when my grandfather died, but I think my dad was maybe 11. And then his mom, she died when she was 60 in a car wreck here down by Galen.
Okay.
And I was only 3 months old, so
okay.
I did not know her. Yeah, and so, and my dad was an only child, so.
Okay.
So that's the story on him.
Okay.
But he's very Irish, and my mother was, of course, very Irish.
Okay.
And my dad was born in Alpena, Michigan, and my mom was born here
okay.
in Anaconda.
And your mother's family were from County Galway, and do you know anything about why they chose to come to Anaconda versus anywhere else? Did they have family or friends already here?
I think they had some family and a few friends already here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And as you said, your parents were both born in the United States. Did they ever relay any stories to you of their parents' lives in Ireland?
No, whenever I'd ask, I even asked my grandparents about Ireland and tell me about it, and they said, we come over from there or in America, and we don't want to talk about Ireland. I couldn't get them to talk about anything about it.
Okay.
Other than they were glad to be in Anaconda.
Oh, okay, okay. What does your Irish ancestry mean to you? What do you think are the most significant, you know, what's the most important aspect of it?
Well, for me, I got this tradition started where from the 1st of March until the 17th, my sister, myself, and a couple of my brothers, they were green. They were green every day from the 1st to the 17th.
Mm-hmm.
And then about the week before St. Patrick's Day, I have a tree that I put up that's decorated with Irish ornaments. And I call it my Christmas Eve on the night of the 16th of March. We have Christmas. We exchange gifts. We sing. And I have my house all decorated in Irish. Any ornaments, everything is Irish that I have in my front room. And I have something in each one of my rooms. And I've been doing this for probably 40 years.
Okay, okay. If we could maybe talk a little bit about your home life when you were growing up. What did your father do for a living, or you know, did your mother have jobs, or you know, anything about your parents?
My dad worked on the smelter. He worked in the lab and then the concentrate, and he worked there for 46 years.
Okay.
And my mom was a home. She raised us kids until I was a junior in high school when she went to work as an aide up with St. Anne's Hospital.
Okay.
And she worked there till she started her vacation in 1975 when she was 60. And she came up here the night that her vacation was starting, and the next morning she died at home.
Oh.
She didn't even get to have her vacation.
No vacation.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Do you know anything about the origins of your family name, either Mangans or Beattie's?
I don't.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't.
Okay. As far as names go in your family, are there any, you know, traditional names or naming customs? You know, like someone has a child, are they named after relatives or?
Most of them.
Okay. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, like my sister Peggy, for instance, she's named after my mom, who was Bridget, and also after my mom's sister Margaret that died when she was 13. So my sister Peggy is Bridget Margaret,
okay,
but she goes by Peggy. And most of the boys in my generation, most of them have either Martin or Michael, either their first name or their second name. And Martin is after my grandfather, Paul Beattie, because his name was Martin.
Okay.
And Michael was for my Uncle Mike.
Okay.
That was a priest.
Okay. Let's see. I have to refer back to my notes here. And you mentioned your Grandpa Beattie. And he came from County Galway, was it from Galway City itself?
He came from Lettermore.
Okay.
And my grandmother came from Lettermullen.
Okay. Okay.
Just right next to each other. Yeah.
Okay. What were some of the names of the other families that your parents knew that were from that same area in Ireland?
Well, there was the Malloys and the Kunes. The O'Hares. The Vaughns.
Okay.
Who else? I can't think of right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Most of them are all relatives. Oh, and the Lachlans.
Okay.
The Lachlans, yeah.
Okay. Let's see. I have to skip around here a little bit.
Okay.
When you were a child, what would be some of your significant or vivid memories of growing up in Anaconda?
Well, when we were kids, there was a bunch of us in the neighborhood, and most of them were from Irish families. And like across the street from us lived Mike and May Hayes, and they had quite an orchestra between them.
Mm-hmm.
And so several nights or whatever, they'd be playing, and these kids would be out in the street, and then the next thing the neighbors would be out, and we'd all be out in the street dancing, listening to their music. And we kind of enjoyed that.
Okay.
And then, like, on St. Patty's Day, when they had the old hall, the Hayeses would play in the little hall where the adults were, and when I got a little older and could go, they had, like, Bud Sager and Lester Nelson. We had a regular band that played for us.
Okay.
So I'd go into the little hall and get my dad to come in and dance with me in the big hall, and then he'd bring me in to waltz with him in the little hall because he didn't like to do fast dancing.
I see. And you grew up on the east side of Anaconda, and was it the home where... is it on 6th Street?
Mm-hmm. 3086th.
Okay.
We were a half a block from being considered living in Goosetown.
Okay.
So we weren't in Goosetown. We were more towards the west side, but we always claimed we were Goosetowners.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And what grade school did you attend when you were
St.
young?
St. Paul's.
Okay.
St. Paul's. Mm-hmm. Up on 4th.
What do you recall of going to school at St. Paul's?
Well, one thing I recall when I was in first grade, the nun I had was Mother Catherine. You know, we had Ursuline nuns that taught us. And we were getting ready to make our first communion in first grade, and I just loved Mother Catherine. She always was very good to me. And the day that I made my first communion, I found out that she was my cousin because she was part of the Molloy family.
Oh.
And she was still alive, maybe about till about maybe 6 years ago, when she was up in Great Falls.
Oh.
Yeah, and you know, we were so concerned that they were real people because you couldn't see any hair and you couldn't, you know, but she was right down to earth.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
Yeah. So
that's nice.
That was nice to to know, yeah.
What kind of things did, when you were, say, grade school age, what kind of things did you and your siblings or your friends do for fun in the neighborhood?
Oh, heavens, we'd go up in the alley, we'd play kick the can. We play baseball. Also up on Cedar Street, Kay Savello lived, and so did Monsignor Tony Brown and his mom. And he used to come out and he'd play with us. One time he was playing ball with us and his mother came to the gate and she told him to quit doing that and to get into the house. And he said, well, I guess I better go. And so he went in, and about 20 minutes later, she came out and says, come on in, and she made us all a bunch of cookies, and we had cookies and milk. But she didn't want him out playing games with us kids. He shouldn't be doing that.
Oh, I see.
He loved doing it. And we'd play, what's the other one, hang-o-seek, and the gals would play jacks. I used to love to sit on the sidewalk and play with jacks.
Oh.
Yeah, and the guys were doing marbles. I did pretty good at marbles myself when I got going with them, because I was kind of a tomboy.
I see. What kind of activities did you kids do, say, in the winter?
Oh, we'd go sledding. My dad would flood our backyard, and we'd have an ice skating rink, and all the kids would come in our backyard and skate.
Oh, right in the backyard.
The backyard, and then... Otherwise, we'd go to the city commons, but we had our own,
mm-hmm.
if we wanted it.
Okay.
That was a lot of fun. Tobogganing and sledding. We'd go up Birch Hill, come down to 3rd Street on the sled.
Okay.
Wasn't much traffic there then, so you didn't have to worry about somebody hitting you.
Oh.
Yeah, that was fun.
Okay. As you were growing up, did anyone have specific, toys and games, or did you just kind of make your own fun or make your own toys, or?
Oh, we had the little boxes we used to make out of apple boxes, you know, the cars, like kitty cars, is that what they call them?
Oh, like go-karts?
Go-kart. My brother Tom and I'd get one of those, and we'd go up Birch Street or down the alleys or whatever.
Okay.
And otherwise we had, regular toys that we play with, but that was something we did every summer. was fun.
Uh-huh.
They don't even do that now. I don't think they even know how to make them.
I see. Well, yeah, kids maybe aren't as creative, maybe.
Yeah.
Was there any kind of entertainment in your home? You talked about the musicians in the neighborhood, the Hayes
mm-hmm.
family.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else like that that you recall?
My dad played the piano, and I have the piano here in my back room, and it's a player piano.
Oh, okay.
And it still works.
Oh.
It's in good shape. And he played the piano, and I tried learning, but just didn't sink in. I wasn't interested in playing the piano.
I see.
I like to be out either hiking or playing or whatever. But yeah, he was good.
So you mentioned you were a tomboy. Did you ever take part in any organized sports? Were there any organized sports?
No, I did. They didn't have the boys and girls together, but I did like volleyball, played baseball, and loved to go hiking.
Mm-hmm.
Up to the sea, or when I was older and with Ray, we used to go over to the Big Hole, and I think I've been in every mountain lake that any man has probably ever been in. And it was fun. But let's see, about 3 years ago, we went up to Glacier with my stepson and daughter-in-law, and my son Brian was there, and we went hiking. We did a 17-mile hike.
Not bad.
I started and finished.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad.
I still like doing that.
Not bad. What kind of were there any organized activities for the kids? Say when you were going to school at St. Paul's.
Not so much as well. Yeah, they did. They had a group that they were teaching. The nuns were teaching some of the dancing, and you'd go upstairs once a week, and they'd have you. The boys and the girls would dance together, and we kind of like
okay.
that.
Okay.
And then in high school, we had like the. Youth Center, had Youth Center, and when we go there at night, they had a band that played, and they'd always have that going after any games, football or basketball. And then sometimes they'd even have one down at the Central,
Mm-hmm.
Bud Sager and Lester Nelson and them used to play there.
Okay.
Yeah, good
okay.
music.
As far as kind of like, the domestic aspect of when you were growing up, where did your family shop for, for necessities, or where did you buy your groceries?
We had a grocery store right across the street, Duncan Grocery, and you could get a lot of incidental things. But
mm-hmm.
other than that, we would shop at Larson's Grocery down on East 4th.
Okay.
And you could call your order in, and they deliver it, and then you either paid it during the week.
I see.
Yeah, and sometimes Safeway's, because Safeway's was down there on Chestnut Street. But you had to go in there and pay cash right away.
Right.
So this way my mom would call in and they'd deliver it up. And so when Dad's money came in, she'd go down and pay the bill.
I see.
Yeah. And then they also had a root beer stand. They had Marcel's root beer stand up right between Oak and Cherry Street. And they had some, like in your high school, you could work there because you could go pull up in the car and you could order root beer and they'd bring them out and put them on a tray.
I see. And the little grocery store that was in the neighborhood, was that the only little you mentioned where you could buy incidentals in the neighborhood? Were there other neighborhood grocery stores?
Well, there was one down on Birch. They had Birch Street Grocery.
Okay.
And there was about three of them right there in a row that you could go. But most of them, you go in and get what you wanted, but if you really ordered a lot, because you could get your meat and your roast, whatever, from Larson's Grocery.
Okay.
So that's
okay. The little grocery store that was across the street from your parents' home, was it also, was it strictly a store, or was it maybe
it was a home as well?
She
lived there, yeah. She lived there, and her two daughters would come and help.
Okay.
Jean Mills Eunice Johnson,
okay.
Charlie Johnson's wife.
Oh, okay. That was their mom that ran the store.
You could go over there and get penny candy. She'd have, you go over, if you go to the store for your parents and go in, she'd give you some candy, or she'd give you a nice big fat dill pickle.
Oh.
Yep, she was good. And she was a heavy set woman. I don't know how she ever made it down the stairs. I mean, she was big.
Oh my goodness. Did your family ever you have any regular outings that you went on, you know, like for a particular, you know, say for example in the summer, were there any, say, 4th of July activities or you know, did you do things like, you know, go picnicking or those types of things on a regular basis?
Yeah, 4th of July, we always would go over to the parade in Butte.
Okay.
My dad had a 1936 Plymouth, and he had 6 flags that he put up on a pole in front of the car. And they'd stay on going over to Butte, and we'd go over to the parade, and we'd go through there. We'd go to Woolworth's store, and at the deli there, he had to have a hot turkey sandwich. It was part of his tradition. We did that every year. Even after I was married, he had a different car, but I went with him a few times and he still did that.
Oh, I see.
Until that closed. And then we'd all come home and, you know, when family, there was bigger families, then we'd go out to Spring Hill.
Okay.
For a picnic. And that would take care of the day. We'd go out and then come home and do fireworks.
Okay.
On the 4th of July. And we did that also for Smelterman's Day.
Okay.
And Smelterman's Day, and we'd all get together. We'd go out to the park for that picnic.
Okay. And that was for someone who may not be familiar with Anaconda, that was a community picnic.
Yeah.
Do you remember anything in particular about Smelterman's Day? You know, what kind
yes,
of things were
they
available?
Had, they had wood cutting contests that my mom and Mark Kelly would get in, and they'd always win. They would always win the two of them. And I'd get in the races, you know, for your different age or whatever, and I did pretty good. Every year I usually won something for racing. And, you know, then they had the gunny sack race that you put the leg in and somebody else, and then you hop with this gunny sack.
Okay.
Joey Stetzner and I did that a couple of times, and we won.
Oh. And most of the activities were sponsored by the Anaconda Company.
Right, and they were out at the park, out at Washer Park. Yeah.
Were there any? Did the unions? All the unions participate in those things
Pretty
too?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then at night they had a dance that the adults could go to, and the kids sometimes would be there too, but mostly it was for adults.
Okay. Were there parades? Was there a parade associated?
They had a parade for kids.
Okay.
Just the kids, like in your wagons or, you know, in some new dress in old-fashioned clothes or whatever, but it was mostly for the kids.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they still have that once in a while, I think, here. They have a parade.
Yeah, I think that they have tried to resurrect that in the last couple of years. Yeah, yeah. You attended high school at Anaconda Central.
Mm-hmm. The old one and the new one.
Okay. Maybe someone who isn't familiar with Anaconda might not know that there was one high school and then it became another high school.
Right. Well, the old high school was down on East 4th Street. It was right across the street from St. Peter's Church.
Okay.
Now it's a parking lot. And then the new one is on the corner of Cherry and 3rd.
Okay.
And we went into that in 1953.
Okay. And
52.
But you weren't the first graduating class.
No.
Okay.
No.
But it was still a relatively new facility.
Yeah, we were sophomores when we went in.
Okay.
Class, yeah.
Okay. And when you left high school, did you go directly to nurses training then?
I did.
Okay. And where did you attend nurses training?
I went to Carroll for a year, and then I went to Billings for 3 months. And then we had a choice of staying there or coming to Butte. And half of the class stayed in Billings and half of us went to Butte because it was for us closer home.
Mm-hmm.
And we went all summer long, all winter long. There wasn't this space in between like they do now.
Okay.
And at Christmas time, you could have a week off, either Christmas or New Year's week. And then in the summer, you got a week off in either July or August. And otherwise, you went to school all the time.
Oh, all 12 months of the year. Okay.
Yep, we did.
Okay. Have you stayed in touch with any of your friends from either high school or nurses training?
I have, yeah. I have a good friend. Well, she lives here too, my friend George Ewan. We've been friends since 3rd grade.
Okay.
And then several of my class, I have two friends in Missoula that I know from training, and there's two from Butte.
Okay.
That we still get together once in a while.
Okay. And you, did your nurses training, were you stationed most, or took your training mostly at Catholic hospitals, or did you work in public hospitals as well?
Catholic hospitals, yeah.
Okay.
Until everyone here turned public, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. You were never in the military, though?
Nope.
Okay. Okay. And I don't even have to ask you if you belong to a recognizable Irish community, because what we've discussed confirms that you have. You know, in addition to the things that you talked about that you specifically do for St. Patrick's Day, what do you recall about when you were growing up, grade school, high school? What were some traditions that your family held as far as St. Patrick's Day goes?
Well, they always, you know, they go to church in the morning, and then come home, and they always had a banquet at night.
Okay.
That they would go to, and that was in the old hall. This, of course, burned down, isn't even around, but, and they'd go down there, and then they'd have a dance, and they'd get together even earlier in the day. They'd go to the neighbors, like over the Hayes's and Gallagher's and Donahue's.
Okay.
You know, and they'd have a toddy or two, you know, get ready for the evening, and so we enjoyed watching them, and we couldn't go to any of that till we were much older.
Okay, because it was primarily for the adults.
Yes, for the adults, yeah.
Okay. Let's see. A couple of things that I remember from our pre-interview. You talked about your grandfather Beatty and dancing on St. Patrick's Day. What do you remember about that?
Oh, well, that's something else. We'd go up, I was about nine, maybe at the most, I guess. And we'd go up every St. Patrick's Day, you know, each year. Because he'd put on all of his garb, you know, his kilts, and he'd have the shillelagh and whatever, and he'd dance from one room to another. And you could go, like, from the kitchen into the bedroom, into the dining room, into the front room, and back and around. And he'd do that whenever we were up there. He'd just, and he'd be singing, and he'd wear, sometimes he'd have his white cap on instead of the wrist. So I used to follow him, because I wanted to learn how to do the jig really bad. I thought that was wonderful. I followed him and followed him. And so one day I asked him, if I could see what he was doing. I said, "Pa Beatty, would you teach me how to do that jig?" And I said, "Well," he looked at me and he put his hands on both hips and he said, "I'm not going to teach any goddamn girl anything, especially the jig." And he didn't. He wouldn't. But I've watched him and I learned how to do it, and I still do it. And he has not, all of his girls, of course, they're all dead now, but not one of them learned how to do it.
But you did from following him around,
yeah.
Even though he wouldn't teach you.
Nope, he wouldn't teach me, but I learned on my own. Yeah.
Well, that's great.
And he would always take my brother whenever they'd go anywhere, my brother Tom. He'd take him fishing. He built a boat himself, and they used to go out to Georgetown Lake fishing in it. He'd come and take him for a ride and different things, and I used to beg to go with them, even if they were going out in the country, because I like that. He wouldn't take me. Never. I got a ride once in one of his cars. Because he gave my mom and I a ride somewhere.
Okay.
And but then when my brother would be gone with him, my grandmother, my mom and I, we'd go downtown. Because neither one of them drove. So we'd go downtown, and my grandma would buy me a little purse or a pair of shoes or something to bribe me, I guess, because I didn't get to go with him. And she felt bad. But no, he never did.
He spent time with the grandsons, but not the granddaughters.
Yeah, and my brother Tom was a grandson for quite a while before any other children came along.
I see.
Number one.
I see. Did your grandfather speak any Irish at home, or?
They do that once in a while out in the kitchen if nobody was there. But if you come out, they'd stop. Just like that, you know, and they'd discuss among themselves. And then you'd ask them, you know, what they were saying, and they wouldn't tell you. They didn't want to talk about that. And he cussed a lot in Gaelic, too.
Oh, did he?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I knew some of those words that he was saying. But.
I see. I see. Let me see.
I can tell you something about their house that we...
Yes.
You know.
And this would be your grandpa Beanie's house.
They lived at 507 East 8th, and it was, you know, a good size home. They raised, they raised 10 kids, and two of them died.
Okay.
So they actually had 12. But when I was younger and all, everybody was around, and I used to go up there and stay a lot, you know, with my aunts. They'd be out on dates, and they'd want me to come and sleep with them. And so I used to go upstairs, and when I'd go to bed, and I was afraid up there, because there was a ghost, and it was a friendly ghost.
Okay.
And this is for sure, because I'd be laying there in bed waiting for the aunt to come, and there's a curtain, and it would just, you know, be very gentle or whatever, and the curtain would move, and you could just feel somebody or something coming towards you. But it wasn't mean, but it was there. And so I never did say anything, but I was afraid to go up there in the dark, because you'd have to go walk across the room, pull the one light on, and that's, you know,
okay.
The light went into the other rooms, and once you got the light on, it wasn't too bad. But anyway, I just kept that to myself for many, many years. And then after the grandparents died, and we had one uncle who was renting a home, and so they decided he should move into this house, and he had three children. And the one cousin, she lives in Helena now, and we've been pretty close, and we were talking one time many, many years after about the house, and I said to her, did you notice anything different about the house or about upstairs? And she said, surely, it was haunted. She said there was a ghost there. And I looked at her and started laughing, and I said, you saw it too? And she said, I sure did. She said, but I said, was it friendly? And she said, well, yeah, I think so, but she scared the heck out of me. And now, and the other sister, I don't think she ever noticed that, but just Mary Lou did.
Okay.
And now the house is gone.
I see.
And my cousin, Pam Swanson, too, she said the house was haunted and it wasn't a good ghost. But I thought the one I saw was a good ghost.
I see.
So, yeah.
And did your family hold other superstitions? That's besides the ghost story aspect, did they have any other particular superstitions?
Oh, yeah. Usually, that's like you have a bath, you can't go out with your hair wet.
Oh.
Yeah, one of those things. And then if you're sick, you know, they always would rub you down with Vicks, compost and whatever. And at night, they'd give you a little tiny hot toddy with honey, because that would clear your throat.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And then if things didn't work, well, they were always giving you something so you have a good bowel movement. Maybe that's what you needed.
Oh.
Yeah.
So kind of those home remedies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Did your grandparents have any other particular, like, superstitions? I'd never heard, I think the one about going out with your hair wet, maybe that was more of a health precaution, but did they have any other things that, kind of taboo things?
I can't remember. Yeah.
My grandmother was always it lived in fear that someone would open an umbrella in the house. So.
Oh yeah, that's, yeah. Yeah. And then, when my grandfather died, actually my grandmother died first.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, back then they brought them home.
Okay.
They brought you home for 2 or 3 days. And a tiny Longfellow would come up before they brought the body home, and he'd put two big black wreaths, one on the front door and one on the back door. And when they brought my grandma home, they came in on the front porch, but they couldn't get her in because they couldn't tip the casket up enough to get through the door, so they had to come out and go around the back, in the back door, and then take her down the hall into the front room.
Oh.
And then prior to that, the women were always worrying. They could hear dogs howling or whatever, and they feared that there'd be some sort of death in somebody's family. And so when it did happen, they say, see, I told you, the dogs were howling. And the women would all be in the kitchen, and they'd have food, you know, preparing things, and they'd have the black clothes on, and there were a net over their hair or a black hat. And they'd be sitting there wailing and crying about the person. And the men would be either in the dining room or else in by the body, because when Tiny brought the body in, he also brought a bottle of whiskey and cigars for the dad, or for the men. And when they got all, they had little glasses of shots, and they'd put them on a tray, and especially if it was the man that died, they put it on his lap in the casket. And you'd come in and say a prayer or two or whatever, and then you'd have a toddy and toast to this man, and you'd toast to me.
Oh my goodness.
And so that's how it was. And they'd have this going on for 2 or 3 days.
Oh.
And then Tiny, when he'd come up after, you know, when you'd see him somewhere, he was kind of funny because he'd have his tape measure, and he'd stand up to one of the other men to measure them to see what size they'd need when they had their casket.
Oh. And this was Tiny Longfellow.
Yep.
And he ran the funeral home.
Yeah.
Well, how old were you when your grandparents died?
My grandmother died, I was 12.
Okay.
And when my grandfather died, I was 17.
Okay. And so you remember the funeral rites held at home? Well, just there until it was time to go to the church
for the actual
funeral.
And my mom died in 1975, and she wanted to be brought home. But they weren't doing that now, you know.
Oh, okay.
And
okay.
She threatened. She said, I want to be home, but they didn't do it.
Okay, yeah.
I was trying on the family, and you'd be there all night. I mean, they wouldn't leave. They'd probably go home, change their clothes or whatever, and come back. And they'd be there 24/7. Somebody'd be there all the time.
Okay.
Kids and all.
And friends and neighbors
would just come in and bring food and... Yeah.
Spend time. And,
But the only thing that was bad for me when I go up there after, I could always see where they were, you know, in the front room. You could vision how they were. Oh, and then speaking of that cousin, the Ursuline, sister, Mother Catherine.
Yes.
She and another man, because they had to come in twos. They couldn't come by themselves, and they didn't drive. They had to walk. And she came up. I can remember that. I couldn't understand. She came in. They came in on the front porch, and they stood in the threshold of the door, but they couldn't step over. They could not go in the house. It was a cloistered order.
Oh.
And they could not go in a home. Irregardless, it was parents or who it was, they could just stand outside. So they'd come and stand there and say the rosary a couple times. And me, I was out on the porch, and I kept saying, why don't you just go in?
Oh.
You know? And Mother Cat says, no, we can't. And I said, why not? And she said, well, we aren't allowed. And that was the answer I got. But then finally I knew later. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And they would come. Yeah.
Oh. That's
interesting. That,
yes,
yeah.
Very interesting. Yes, yes.
I'm glad it's not like that now for the nuns.
true. When you were growing up, did you have any particular, you know, like traditional foods that you had, or foods associated with particular holidays, or?
Oh yes, for any holiday, my mom always did a turkey.
Okay.
We'd have turkey for Christmas, and then you'd have a few days later, and come New Year's, she'd do another turkey.
Okay.
Yeah, we had turkey. Easter, we had turkey. 4th of July, I mean, any holiday, she did turkey.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other particular foods that your mom prepared that were, I don't know, that you kind of associate with being Irish and growing up Irish?
Oh, she used to love, which I never liked, she liked to do pickled pig's feet.
Oh.
You know, with sauerkraut and cabbage. And I did the sauerkraut and cabbage, but I didn't do the pig's feet.
Okay.
And they all did. They all liked that, but I didn't. Yeah. Do you like them?
No, I do not.
Yes.
But I do remember my grandmother eating them.
Yeah.
And then I remember that you might have mentioned when we... something about food one time about someone eating peas.
Oh yeah,
peas?
My grandfather.
And this was your grandfather, Beattie?
Beattie, yeah. You see, I didn't know my grandfather on my dad's side.
Oh, okay.
We'd be up there for dinner, and he'd take green peas, and he'd take his knife, and he'd put them on right to the very end to the handle, and we'd all be watching, and he could lift that thing up and put it in his mouth and put them in without dropping any of them. And he could do it every time. And we'd be up there on purpose if we knew they were having peas, so we could have him do that.
So that was kind of entertaining,
tradition.
Watching
Pa
Beattie eat peas with a knife.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's right. I forgot about that.
And then, since we're kind of on the topic of holidays and calendars, do you want to tell us a little, and I've taken a picture of it, tell us a little bit about your traditional calendar that you keep.
All right, well, the calendar I have, it takes me, I do it every year, I keep it up to date. It takes me about 4 days to do it because I have dates for weddings and funerals and births and somebody in a new home. Celebrations that are coming up or things that we've done, animals, new animals that they have or whatever. If somebody had a surgery that's important, I put that on there. And so I'm sort of the family historian. And my brother Tom and Helena, one time he'd call and I'd just look up, you know, when was so-and-so. And he said, let me take that and make a copy of it. Well, I waited till I had an older one and I let him take it. And I said, then bring it back. I said, if you want to do that, you do your own. It takes me a while to do them. Mm-hmm. But they don't. They call and ask me. And I have, you know, if you have to go to the doctor, if you have to renew your license, or, I mean, anything's on there.
Okay. And so you keep important family records on there, too, as mm-hmm. well, you know, like birthdays and, yep. and death dates and anniversaries.
Yep.
And
mm-hmm.
Okay.
And who goes into a new home and where they're at and whatever. And it's just, well, you took a picture so you can see them. All the squares are taken up.
Yeah, and they are. It's got a lot of information on those calendars. And then I also took a picture of your grandparents' wedding picture. And in particular, your grandmother was wearing a beautiful dress. And then you said that there's a story connected with that dress and an uncle of yours that was a priest.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd like to tell us about that.
He took my grandmother's wedding dress, the bottom part, took it and had part of his garb that they wear for masses or for funerals.
Okay.
And he had that made. And also he had her wedding rings and she had a ruby ring and he had that put in his chalice.
Okay.
So whenever he'd say a mass for the family or a wedding or a death, he would describe that this dress, the bottom of his mother's dress, was what he's wearing. And I'd sit there and kind of chuckle because I have the top of the dress. I don't know how I got it, but I have the top of the dress. And so he's not alive now. He
okay.
died.
Okay. And his name was
Malachi Michael Beattie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought that was a